Hey everybody, the Slackademics debut album, Pass Fail, is finally out. Here's a sampler of the G chords used in all 13 of the tracks on the album. There are two songs that don't have a G chord. Can you tell which ones I had to pitch shift? Okay, maybe just go listen to the album. I normally put like a goofy, funny excerpt at the beginning of the episode before we play the theme song. I wonder if this one needs to be a not a content warning, but like, what would you say? Like, if you want to feel, like, maybe listen to this episode. If you don't want to feel, don't listen to this episode.
I mean, this is like real talk. Like, we joke around a lot and that's lovely. And I feel like this is jovial too, but for different reasons. But this is some real talk. Like, you're getting a lot of personal disclosure in this sidetrack from me specifically. And all you right, as well.
So word of warning, listeners. You're about to hear a drum fill that's going to cue in the Nevermind the Music theme song. Okay. Hey, I'm Mark.
Hey, I'm Nicole.
And this is Nevermind the Music.
Sidetrack. It's a sidetrack day.
What are we doing today?
Today, we're going to talk about songs that make us cry.
Even though you're laughing.
It was my idea, and I regret
it. You're laughing. Is this like a nervous laugh? You regret it. Okay. Well, we're going to get really emotional today, right?
I don't know. I don't really get emotional. Do you?
I have five examples of me getting emotional in music.
I have seven examples.
Oh my gosh.
But we don't have to do them all.
We probably should because when we did the...
There was one that I fell short. It was...
Was it the Holly? No, no, no.
No, it was the Brothers and Sisters, like the family bands.
Oh yeah, back when
we did... You had like
10
examples. I had like two.
I had 10 and you were like, I have a sister. I didn't know there were other types of familial relationships. Wait, you didn't even do sisters. You did twins. You did twin sisters or something. Yeah. Anyways. Okay. So
anyway,
I will say honorable mentions that I'm not going to count because they already heard it. When we were on the Taylor Swift Cardigan episode and I brought up that Nickel Creek song
to
the airport that was like COVID era that like hit me hard when I was on a run once listening to it.
Yeah, you cry when you run.
I'm not going to claim it because the audience is already Leo pointing memeing going, oh, we know. Mark has one, but do you like crying?
We were talking about this before
we started rolling.
I like the idea of crying. I'm not a crier. I have more cognitive empathy than affective empathy. Like, I can think about being sad and I know what sadness feels like, but I'm not going to like cry with you. Yeah. I'm just not. I'll cry by myself. I cry, honestly, about like mostly about like the passage of time. Like, that gets me. And a lot of my songs are about time passing, loss, like kids growing up.
Is there like Cats in the Cradle in the Silver
Spoon? No, but like that vibe. Like, I'll always cry at like the last day of school or like the first day of school. I'll get a little teary. I don't know why. But I don't cry at like great profound loss, really. What makes you cry besides these songs?
I mean, I should say that to clarify, I have not experienced an out of phase death in my life yet.
Oh.
Right. Is that the term?
No, it would be an off time.
Off time. Yeah. We talked about that last season a little bit. Mm-hmm. So all that is to say, I have not experienced truly profound loss.
Oh.
Right. In my life. I have only experienced passing of people that were pretty on time.
On time.
Right? Relatively speaking.
Yeah. Well, good.
So or so out of time that I wasn't even born yet.
Yeah.
Like profoundly out of time, but like I
weren't like part of it.
Yeah. Mm. People that I never met, that kind of thing. So
well, lucky for us, I've experienced many off time losses and events in my life. So I have a lot of content to pull from here.
And so I have to say, like, everything that I talk about that hits me emotionally should be taken with
like,
that.
Not even like a friend that died from like drugs or mental health or nothing.
People I knew. Yeah, I mean, there have been people I knew that has happened,
but not
to.
Like your friends.
Nobody that was really close to me. Right?
You're lucky, I guess.
I'm extremely lucky
in that regard. I guess if that's luck, I don't know.
Yes. So people that I knew, yes, but not people that I had a close emotional bond with.
You know,
right?
When someone said to me once, like, "Oh," I said, "Oh, I'm so lucky," and they're like, "Yeah, you are, because you've survived all the bad things that have happened to you." And I reframed luck. Like, luck isn't not having bad things happen to you. It's surviving the bad stuff that happens to you with a good attitude. And, like, that's luck.
Yeah.
And I just think that's interesting framing. So
I should say then that all of these, I don't want to say sappy, but, like, emotional kind of, there's a lot of coming of age kind of.
Okay.
You say passage of time. I think
coming
it's that
age.
Kind of things that are about whether it's nostalgia mixed with, as I've become an adult, like, the weight of the world in mostly almost a positive way has found its way to crack my little shell of cold lack
hearts.
Of emotion,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, not to spoil too much of it, but I've categorized these to try to kind of make sense of them, but they're mostly not all sad, right? They're like sad, happy, sad. That's kind of what hits me. I'm more likely, if I'm watching a movie, like as a younger man or a teenager, I would never tear up or whatever, get choked up in a movie. But it started happening when I was an adult. And it's often the kind of, wow, that's really sentimental and touching, as like, opposed to person dying on...
Like Coco, like the movie Coco.
Coco, I don't remember if Coco hit me, but Coco was nice.
Yeah.
But like...
My husband cries at Coco. He doesn't cry at anything, but Coco gets
I'd have to think of specific examples, but, you know, nobody can survive the first 10 minutes of Up.
Oh, yeah.
Without getting a little choked up.
A little choked up,
but that's like... There's beauty in that sequence, too.
Yeah.
Right? Spoilers. There's loss felt in that 10 minutes, but there's beauty in it, too, right?
It is beautiful. So, well, that's just it. Like, life is beautiful and sad and... cruel and uplifting all at the same time. That's what makes it like awesome.
This isn't one of my examples, but we were just on a really long road trip, my wife and my kids. And my kids asked me what a particular song was about. And I actually saying the words out loud made me choke up. Like, and it was weird. Like, I had never really engaged emotionally in the moment. And that's kind of a running theme way back on the Dream Hydra hype, my last band, Dream Hydra Hype episode. I talked about writing a song inspired by 9/11, right?
Yeah.
Like 10 years later and crying, watching like a recap, like an anniversary video, even though I hadn't at all when it happened.
Because you were thinking of like, this is the world that your kids are going to grow up in.
And I didn't have kids yet. But I was like, I saw the world and I was also touched by like my lack of emotionality 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
And that was scary to me. And so like, I feel like I have a reactive, retrospective sort of view of crying and tears and emotion and stuff. So people that knew me when I was, you know, early 20s probably would be shocked to even hear that I ever would cry from a song. Like it's a newer thing. What about you?
It's,
you don't really yourself, but you're not like cry it out, get some catharsis kind of person.
I'll like get catharsis through tears, but I'm never like, I don't sob. Like, I'm not someone that'll just break down and just be inconsolable, like sobbing to anything. I'll do like a quiet tear, but there's never been a moment in my life that I've been like, inconsolably crying. Like, I'm just not that girl. And like, that's fine if you are. Like, I kind of am jealous of people that can really let it all out like that. I just can't. I have too many inhibitions. Like, I can't do that. Too many, I lack inhibition. I have too many inhibitions. What would be the inverse of inhibitions?
Inhibition? Anti-inhibition? What is
the... I don't know.
Right in, people.
But like, either way, I'm not that. Like, I can't let go like that. I'm too guarded.
So,
maybe.
What made you want to do this episode?
I just was thinking of, sometimes I get sad and I do want that feeling of sadness and I have like a quick playlist that can like bring me to tears as much as I can get there. Like,
wow.
So I was just thinking about what attracts me to like sad, somber music. And for me, it's usually about lyrics. And then I was thinking of you and how you interpret music. And I'm wondering if it's about lyrics for you too, or if it's about tonality or chord progression, if you've figured out like the chords that will make you cry.
The cry button chord, the minor four.
Like, is there one?
There is, but looking at my list, I feel like some of these might be sad, but they're all context.
Yeah, for me, it's the lyrics and mostly the bridges. Now that I know about musical form, I was like, I looked at the lyrics and I was like, oh, it's always the bridge that gets me, always.
That's okay. I'm fascinated. I can't wait. And I should say, I don't know what yours are and you do not know what mine are.
No.
And forgive me, because some of these clips might be a little longer than are normal, but what we're trying to make points, and there's a couple that I pulled up that have an emotional arc that you gotta listen to, like,
that's what I was having a hard longer. Time. So, yeah, like, I just played the bridge of the song, but you need the chorus to lead up to the bridge to, like, make movement.
So make it clear what you want me to pull once we do them.
I do. Yeah,
and,
I have it.
I've got 5. You've got 7. So why don't you start?
Okay. The first song that, like, is a warm-up, and I'm not going to say it makes me cry, but it gets me really emotional, is Bonnie Raitt's I Can't Make You Love Me. I just think that that's a very, very, very beautiful song.
Do you have a cute category for it?
I don't really have a cute cat. Like, all of mine are about saying goodbye in a way.
Okay.
Or, like, but this is just, like, a quiet resolve.
This came up in an episode forever ago. It's our Doobie Brothers episode.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. Oh, because it uses a cadential 6-4 chord. What if the cadential 6-4 chord? Okay, so which part of the song do you want me to cue up? Because that'd be hilarious if it's the part with the cadential 6-4
like
chord.
I think just like the chorus. Like, I can't make, I can't make your heart feel something it won't. I just think that that quiet resolve gets me. And she's so accepting of it, and it's sad but not like weepy, so I really relate to it. It's this quiet sadness of, like, we have to let go and move on, and there's nothing I can do about it, that I think really speaks to the human condition in a way that's, like, really, really powerful. And her voice, her vocal performance here is just so great, and it's so raw and honest, and I really love Bonnie Raitt. I'm not gonna say she's a lesbian icon, because she's not. I was confused that
we
time
already
when
talked
I said
about
it before.
That yeah, I looked it up confused by what you were saying.
I can't make you love me if you don't. You can't make your heart feel something it won't. Here in the dark, in these final hours, I will lay down my heart and I'll feel the power.
But is this something, because this is what, like 91 or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, around there.
Was this that way back then?
No.
Or is that as
I mean,
an adult?
I was 10, so no. I didn't really think about leaving my lover because they didn't love me back at that age.
You weren't aiming high enough,
no,
unfortunately.
I wasn't. But something recently, my niece sang this song at a like vocal concert. Like, she takes voice lessons and she sang this song. She's like 12 when she sang it. And I remember thinking, what a funny song for a 12-year-old to be singing. But her performance was so powerful that it made me laugh and, like, cry for her getting older and then having to, like, say goodbye to a lover that wasn't working out, which is twisted. Oh. It's, like, so dark and weird. But it kind of turned me back onto the song, hearing her practice it. And I don't know, I think the lyrics are beautiful.
Kind of a context thing, it is.
Yeah, it's a context thing, for sure. So that's my first. We're starting off easy.
All right, so my easy one, this category of why I cry, is The World is a Beautiful Place.
Oh, that's nice.
So I think this may have actually been mentioned like a long time ago, as in as far ago as Bonnie Raitt was mentioned on this podcast. And this song actually came up on our holiday episode, but the context is totally different. So I'll explain why, but this is September by Earth, Wind & Fire, 1978. This 100% is a life moment kind of thing. This song, there's nothing about this song musically or lyrically that should make me cry, right? It has intersected in my life in particular moments. This is the kind of religious person would say a signs kind of thing. So like part one of those things is artificial, right? This is the first song we had played at our wedding.
Okay.
So like this is just a jam where like, this is the song we want everybody to dance to first at the wedding, so please play it, right? But right after we moved to New England, and maybe I mentioned this randomly, it was our first fall. I moved to New England in late August and had no idea. It was right after the Snowmageddon year.
Yeah,
I missed that. I didn't know anything about New England weather, what was coming. And I went for a run in probably mid-October, and it was right, or maybe late October, right after the first cold snap, and leaves were falling. And I was on a run, and I came to this like glade or whatever in my town, and there was just red leaves, like mm-hmm. literally falling from the tree. And right, I always listen to music when I'm running. I couldn't run if I didn't have music. It just wouldn't exist for me. And it, right as this song hit, and it wasn't September, because September, the leaves don't fall here. We're not far enough north. But it felt fall to me. And there was just this wave of emotion that hit me. Mm. And it wasn't sadness. It wasn't happiness. It was just like the context of this song with beauty and like, everything's going to be okay. Like I just driven literal 3,010 miles to get here.
Right.
Didn't know anybody here, just taking a new job. Wife currently unemployed for the sake of this move. Small, not even toddler at home. And just everything's going to be okay. Right. And I always associate this song with that, even though it's just random. It could have been probably any song. Like, okay, the wedding thing is fine, but there is other songs I love from my past too, right? So like any song that hit me emotionally as I approached that clearing of trees just would have done it for me, and whatever, it would always be that. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sobbing, but I'm on this run and I'm tired or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of, it happened.
It like felt spiritual. You were at like, you were embarking on a new crossroads of life. And like, that was the moment you were validated that like, okay, this is a good choice. This was a good move. Yeah. And it's beautiful here. I couldn't imagine living someplace without seasons. It must be so boring.
I know, it's pretty darn beautiful in Southern California, though.
I guess, but like when you see the falling leaves the first time, it reminds me of like the first time there's a nice like crisp snowfall in our area and you see the snow sparkling on the trees and it just feels like you're inside a snow globe.
Like before just, the like, wind has knocked it off.
Right. Yeah. It's just like quiet and magical and like everything's whited out and it's just so like unstimulating in a really peaceful way.
Yeah. You got to be careful standing under one of those beautiful trees though,
right?
Because if a wind
down.
Hits, you're going to get knocked. yeah. Did we even say at the beginning, we're talking about songs that make us cry specifically, not just crying. This song does not still.
No.
It was really a one-time thing.
It was just that moment.
I'm nostalgic for that moment though.
Yeah. I have a song that will make me cry every time. And it makes me cry because it is about paths not taken, but also about how the world's going to beat you up and change your course. And that's beautiful because it helps put you on the right path and form you to who you are, even if it's not who you expect it to be. So it's from a musical called The Waitress. I like the Sarah Bareilles version. It's called She Used to Be Mine.
But that's her. She did the music from
she
that.
She did, yes.
Okay, she wrote it. Yeah, got it.
So have you heard the song? Are you familiar with it? You'd love it.
No, what's it called again?
She Used to Be Mine.
She Used to Be Mine, no.
Can we listen to it a little? I know we're going to go long if we listen to everything, but just the bridge, now that I know what a bridge is. And it's about when she says she used to be mine, she's talking about herself, like this version of her that doesn't exist anymore.
And then she'll get stuck and be scared of the life.
Just so good.
I wasn't able to process. I've never heard this before. I wasn't able to process any of the words,
right?
But it's musically affecting.
The whole song is about this idea that you can be flawed and broken and the world can chew you up and spit you out. And that doesn't hurt you. It just makes you stronger and more like more of a pure version of who you're supposed to be. And I just really find comfort in that. And it makes me cry because it's beautifully delivered. The lyrics are great. It's really powerful. It's very fun to sing in your car after you've had a bad day, which I'm a fan of. And it's just a gorgeous moment of self-actualization and growth for females. And a lot of these songs are about that, I think, now that I'm looking at my list.
How many of your seven are power ballads? Like sad, big songs with like epic climaxes and stuff.
That was really it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that was.
Because the Bonnie Raitt tune is not power ballad. It's power ballad adjacent. It just never has that epic.
This is the only one that has that like epic belting moment.
Cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Nice.
It's super nice.
My next category I just call Love Hurts. This one, I actually don't know. I might be cheating because I don't know if I actually ever cried to it because I was young enough that I was just dull and numb to my emotions. This one does not get me at all anymore. It just used to very much. And it's all about context. So this is a song. So this is And So It Goes by Billy Joel.
Okay.
1983. But specifically the Bob Chilcott arrangement for TTBB Men's Chorus.
Of course.
And this is a performance. And so that's you're already clued into the context maybe here. This is the King Singers performing a section of this piece. So what's the deal with this?
What's the deal?
I was just starting to get into music as a, like seriously, as a college freshman. And I joined a choir, a men's choir specifically. That was my first time doing anything like this. This is before the barbershop, before the acapella. Well, I guess it's concurrent to also getting into college acapella groups. I was a political science major that was about to adopt music as a second major. And I was going through what for me felt like a catastrophic breakup, world ending kind of hurt. Mm. And this was a song we were learning and it was just like hard to get through it. I don't think I was ever crying in rehearsal, but I felt like it. And so it was this weird mix of like profound sadness, but also like I was making really good friends, some of which literally I'm still friends with now in this men's chorus at my undergrad. And we were singing this song that I didn't really know the Joel song that well, but it was just like would hit me in the feels like every time. And I'm not really a lyric guy, but it would as this sad love song. But the vocal sort of just the resonance of being in this group of people that I was kind of finding my what would be my future identity, really, right? Because I'm much more close to, I don't sing in choirs anymore, but like I'm closer to that guy than I was to the poli-sci major guy who was going to go be a lawyer.
Absolutely. Right?
So this one, the song is pretty, like it doesn't hit me. I'm too far removed from that, but like I'm pouring one out for cold, emotional, early 20s Mark that was about to cry, but couldn't quite do it.
Right. And it's about like finding the moment when you feel like you found your people instead of just trying to fit in. You actually belong. You like belong somewhere. And that's an important moment in an early adult's life.
But I feel like that wasn't what was hanging over me. It's only really in retrospect that I perceive that also being there, because really what I was just really sad. Right.
Oh, buddy.
So but I mean, it's a bad breakup, right?
Yeah.
Nobody can tell you because I mean, this was like a girlfriend for a few years or whatever. Nobody can tell you when you're 19 or 20 or whatever. Like 19. Nobody can tell you that's not the end of the world, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, listeners, any Zoomers or Gen Alphas listening to us, which there's three of you probably, it's not the end of the world, everybody. The end of the world.
But like, it's plenty important of other to things. Like honor those relationships. They're so formative and they teach you so much.
Very important. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
What do you got?
It's my next song you might not know, but it's very, very good, obviously. It's called The 30th by Billie Eilish. Are you familiar with this Billie Eilish tune?
Which record is that from?
I don't even know.
Oh, I don't think it's on a record. That's why I'm like confused. I'm like, because this one's new, but not new.
Two song EP guitar songs.
Yeah. What if it happened to you on a different day on a bridge where there wasn't a rail in the way or a neighborhood street where the little kids play or the Angeles crest in the snow or the rain? What if you weren't alone? There were kids in the car. What if you were a mom? No one
changed anything? Would you not have survived? You're alive, you're alive, you're alive.
Dude,
I'm probably going to cry talking about this.
Dude, so I don't know that song.
It's beautiful.
Definitely. Wow.
So, context. The first time I heard this song, my kid was taking voice lessons, and we come from a very vocal family. And she was really working on breath control and the song.
She was learning to sing Man Child by, what was the song? There's a Sabrina Carpenter song that her voice teacher's like, I'm not comfortable having a young woman
it was
sing
Sabrina
this.
Sabrina Carpenter's house tour.
Oh, okay. All right.
Nate was like, no, thank you. But she has a voice teacher, and Kara, who listens to the podcast, hi, was saying, like, let's work on this song. This part, the bridge that you just played, it's all, she does it all in one breath, which is really impressive, and it's really hard to sing. So my kid was working on breath control, and this was like, her goal was to sing that whole thing in one breath, and she could do it. And then the teacher says, Nicole, come on in and like listen to her sing. She sounds so good. And I'm listening to her sing this song, and I never heard it before. And I'm like trying not to sob in front of my kid, because what my kid doesn't know is that I barely survived childbirth, and there were so many things that lined up in a way to allow for my survival that, like, I'm not a spiritual person, but it was like there were so many circumstances that had to be just in place for me to have survived, and I did. And when she's singing the song, like, what if it happened to you on a different day? Like, what if you were driving? What if you had kids in the car? What, like, all of these things could have happened and gone wrong for me, and they didn't. And it allowed me to be alive, to be this kid's mom, who's now singing this song to me with no idea of the context of it. And it's all Billie Eilish is like kind of writing the song for her friend that was in a car accident, saying like she's in her hospital bed and she's scared and Billie's scared too. And I remember being in the hospital bed holding my newborn, being so scared that I wasn't going to get to be her mom. And I am. And it was just really profound and beautiful. And I'm watching her perform it, and she's just so great. And I love her so much. And it was just a lovely moment. And this song, the vocal delivery here is beautiful and really haunting. And it just gets to that like rumination piece that I go to sometimes about like, what if things had been different? Because they could have been very, very, very different. And this song just kind of tickles that in me in a way that feels very raw. The end.
Jeez.
Any questions?
Any questions? Your daughter does not know anything about that.
She does now. So I've
okay.
She does. I treat news. I heard I'm gonna get sidetracked on the sidetrack, but there's been a couple moments in my daughter's life that we've had to give her like big, unpleasant bits of information. And instead of just sitting her down all at once and explaining it all, someone gave me the advice, like, kids take in information like they eat an apple. You know, like how a toddler eats an apple? They'll take a bite and then put it down and then come back to it and take another bite. So I've given her like little bites of this apple. And then very recently, after like this moment with this song, she asked me more directly about what happened. And she's older now and can like understand. And I was very concrete with her about like the fact that I shouldn't have survived and I did. And it's often come up, and this is real talk, when she's like, why don't I have siblings? Because she's an only child. I can't have any more kids because I would probably
too
die.
Risky.
It's too risky. No one wants to roll the dice on that. But she always like, oh, I want a brother and sister. Like, why don't I have? And I could never be very cavalier about why. And now she like kind of understands. She's like, oh, yeah, I'd rather have you than a sibling. And that's really the choice it was for our family. But now she like knows a bigger picture of it. And she's like, wow, mom, like, that's scary. I was like, yeah, it was really, really scary. And now she's like seeing pictures of me in the hospital, like holding her as a little baby. And she's like, wow, that's scary. So the song makes me think of that. And I'm so glad she's getting old enough that I can talk to her about it, because it's a pretty big part of me. And I'm glad that I can like finally share it with her. It gives her a better understanding of a lot of my motivations in my life. Like, I didn't survive against all odds to like get mad that you've got a B on your math test. Like, it's fine. So
should I like What's our most annoying ad music? The punk one, the just cut right to that.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah,
I mean, thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
I guess we're asking for it on this episode to get like kind of speechless stuff.
And like the thing is, like what I think is really cool about humans is we all have that stuff. Like we all have depth and richness and we're all three dimensional. And you'll never know everything about everyone. And there's so many of us.
Yeah.
You know, like we know each other pretty well and we'll never know everything about each other. We'll never know everything about your spouse or your kid or your best friend. Like you just won't. And that's why it's awesome to be alive because you get to keep figuring people out.
But now our listeners know a little more about.
They know a little bit more about my medical trauma.
They can keep amping up this parasocial relationship they've got with you. When they ever meet you, they're like, so how's your postpartum near-death experience treating you? Any updates? And you're like, oh, hi, what is your name?
Yeah, like, hi.
Where
thanks.
Are you from?
No, I kind of love it. I think it's fine. It's nice to be vulnerable.
Yeah, thank you. That's beautiful. I think that's the kind of recontextualization of something, right? Also, not that the Billie Eilish song existed, but it's multiple layers of your history that gives it meaning.
Right. And it's lovely. It's beyond that, it's just a beautiful song.
Yeah. Oh god, I did not know this one when you first said it. I'm like, that title, I don't know. I've heard all her records, why don't I know it? Because I need to check out the singles.
It's a gorgeous
too.
Gorgeous song. So
all right,
next.
So my last category was Love Hurts. This category is called Love Hurts But Friendship Is Real. So this is a song. This is something that is so old it was on MySpace, but then never anything else. So this is a song written by a friend of mine.
Nice.
College friend, college roommate, actually. And he was suffering through some stuff, but in the midst of his own kind of, you know, challenges, he also had a really rough breakup. So here's another youthful breakup song. But the context here is that he wrote this song, and this song actually was written for the college a cappella group we were in together. And I never sang it. I was not a part of the group at that point, but I went to their concert, and watching this song get performed was like really emotional for me. Just this sort of like watching this group of guys that a lot of them I was friends with performing the song that I knew the story to, that I was living with this guy while he was writing it. And he was pretty open about the writing process. Like he'd show me the song as it was taking shape and stuff like that. And so it just really hit me to see it performed. And then a couple years later, when I had moved to Los Angeles and started graduate school, he hung out once and we went in like to the studio at my grad school and just recorded like a demo of it and a couple other songs, but like instrumental, not a cappella. We made like a country rock kind of cover of it. And so this is a song written by my friend Dan called A Place to Call Home. And it just like hit me watching it really emotionally. And now I have these memories of the sort of one of the last times I really got to like make music with him was this random, let's go to the studio at my grad school and punch the code in and get let in after hours and record.
That's cool.
And I should say he's the one singing this, and then I'm sort of on other things.
Really nice, Mark. Dan has a great voice.
Yeah. I don't know if he still sings. I haven't talked to him much in the
last
decade.
Oh, buddy.
So yeah. Yeah. That one's, just moment in time, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love that.
Less heavy.
Less heavy, but I'm into it. And the song's beautiful.
But heavy stuff going on, you know, at the time. Okay. Right?
For sure. It's so unlike the music you write now.
Well, I didn't write it.
Well, I know, but even still.
I just sort of...
You're attached, adjacent.
It. Yeah, well...
Yeah.
But I think it was unlike the music he was writing, too. He's more of a jazz guy.
Yeah, I can see that.
But
I like that. More of that. Get Dan in here.
Yeah, I don't...
Whatever happened
our,
to him?
Our Project Northside Special is what we called it. We just recorded like four songs we had written and just...
That's great.
That was it.
I think there's potential there.
Yeah.
Dust that off.
A mid to late 2000s little side thing. All
into
right.
it. Okay. I have one more.
What?
I have a couple more, but they're so like, can I just go through like some stupid ideas that I had?
Well, give me one more. Give me one more and then I'll do one more because I have two more.
Okay. Well, the next one I have is very... indie, not well-known singer-songwriter named Taylor Swift.
Okay.
Have you heard of Taylor Swift?
No.
No. Okay. She's, she was a pop country singer, but then really went into the pop, you know, elevated to the upper echelons of pop music. She wrote this song called Marjorie about her dead grandma.
Mm.
And it really gets me when you think about like on-time losses, right? That we talked started this episode talking about off-time events and on-time events. The loss of a grandparent is an on-time event, one that like is expected in the natural life course. But a lot of times with these on-time events, like you forget that when they're gone, they're really gone. And maybe those moments that you didn't want to go visit grandma or didn't want to like call your parents, right?
Because
you were too busy, that like that those moments are going to slip away. And when they are gone, they're gone. So I think it's the bridge of the song. I have a hard time decoding her songs because there's like all this stuff happening.
So this is Evermore, which is why I don't remember this song because I don't hear that one as much.
What died didn't stay dead. What died didn't stay dead. You're alive in my head. What died didn't stay dead. What died didn't stay dead. Alive, so alive. And if I didn't know better, I'd think you were singing to me now.
Oh, I totally remember that song.
It's
that's
a beautiful
one of my
song.
I just don't remember the name. That's one of my favorite songs
it's
off of
awesome.
That.
It's awesome. And the backing track of that like ghosty sound, her grandmother was an opera singer, and that's like her that they put in the track, which is really lovely. I never really got into Evermore. I mean, I'll have to say, first time I really got into the song was during the Eras Tour when all that the content for that came out. And I was like, what is this song? It was just around when my dad died. And I remember I found like something that it was like a receipt that had his signature on it. And it just like hit me like a ton of bricks. So I was like, oh my, like he's gone. And like I'm like clinging to this receipt just because he signed it one day and like, his hand touched a pen that touched this piece of paper. And this is like what I have left of my dad, which is so sad.
Wow.
Right. And there's so much. I mean, I have so much left of my dad. Like I do. But the line in the song, like should have saved every grocery store receipt, like because every part of you would be taken from me. That really, it just like slapped me across the face because it's so true when you feel like a powerful loss. Like looking back, like I should have saved everything. I should have like kept all of it. And in moments of grief, you just kind of purge everything and just like get it out of here. But now I'm like, I wish I had everything he ever touched because I just loved him so much. And that's a grief reaction that's healthy. And this song just like gets me for that. And I remember, in the Eras Tour, there was all this content and there was all these videos of like people watching the Eras Tour with their grandparents or with their dads or something. And there was this one video of this like old stoic grandfather like watching this song with his granddaughter, and he was just like quietly sitting with like tears running down his face. And I was like, oh my gosh, like that's how powerful music can be, that it can tap into like all these deep like emotions that we suppress, especially around like loss and grief. I think that's an area that like we do need that catharsis on, and this song like gives me that catharsis, and I love it. It's beautiful.
Wow.
So there you go.
But this isn't on time.
Yeah.
On time loss. Yeah. And I'm not going to play. This doesn't count as one of mine, but like one of my key on time losses was my great grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
She was 103 years old.
Wow.
And the aforementioned 3,010 mile trip from Los Angeles to Boston we stopped to visit her and she died that night.
Oh, God.
And so it was an on time loss, so to speak. But like the sadness and emotionality for me, even though I loved her, I knew like she lived in Nebraska, but I still saw her throughout my life. It was associated with my dad, the sadness I was feeling, because he was like, my dad's mom died before I was born, way early, like mid 40s. And she was the oldest daughter. My dad was the oldest son. And so he had like a bond with her. She was like, and she like held on for him to visit. And to be driving this big moving truck after leaving her place, knowing she was probably going to die in the next few hours, was a trip experience for me as a son. Like, I wrote a song about it. Like, there's one of the Psychedelic songs called Her Flame is basically about that moment and driving in that truck.
Yeah.
And so it's the context around, you know, with her also, she lived through, she was a German immigrant family during World War One, when like people were like, whatever you call racist against Germany, like, did we hear your dad speak in Germany? Like Pitchfork Brigade driving up to her house. Like the stories these people have when you've lived that life. So that's what's gone.
Yeah.
Right. And why didn't we write that down or record that?
Well, that's just it.
So like, you have things, but you don't, you can't ever have everything.
You can't ever have everything. And that's what the song is about to me. Like, we have things. I have memories, but I'll never get to ask my dad questions about how, about his three-dimensionality.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I'm really eager to disclose my three-dimensionality to my kids, so she knows that I'm more than just her mom.
Yeah.
Right? We think of our parents as in these little, like, cocoons of, like, parenthood, but there's so much more to them. There's so much more that we don't know. And I didn't realize that until I was a parent myself, because now I realize I have all that nuance. So my mom and dad must have too. And their parents must have too.
You didn't stop being a real person when you had kids.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, it just kind of deepened my real personhood.
Wow.
So
thank you.
Yeah, and the song is again, a beautiful song. It's well written. The lyrics are really strong. Musically, it's really strong. And they do just remind me to be very present in my relationships. Because they're not guaranteed to last forever.
Wow. My next one that I'll actually play, the category is Parenthood is Emotional.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a whole also category of song that it's hard to get through when I'm trying to sing it.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And that's one of these, right? So there's this weird indie band from the mid and late 2000s called Tally Hall.
Okay.
Kind of like nerdy, lots of vocals, like kind of random, weird, alternative sort of indie rock, I guess. And they have this song that I really didn't pay attention to because I'm not really a lyrics guy. It's called Be Born. And it's about singing to an unborn child, like being incubated, right? And, you know, it's play on words of the sun and thus a son, right? And there's all this kind of, you know, fun, kind of clever trickery that I didn't really care about and I didn't really recognize until my kid was already born, my oldest. And when I had like a baby up through probably 3 years old, I did so much like sitting with my acoustic guitar playing kid-friendly songs or even a ukulele or whatever.
Yeah.
Either with another dad or just by myself. And this song was in my repertoire, but it didn't hit me like what it was really, basically the emotionality of such a sweet song. There's this particular line in particular that I'll highlight. It didn't hit me until I was trying to perform it and I like couldn't. Like my voice would break every time. There's this one line about the mom. Jesus, like it hits me.
Yeah, already, Mark. He's crying.
Because I read it. Because I read the line. I didn't even say it. She's been waiting long and hard to kiss your head and hold your hands and hold you while you fall asleep.
Yeah.
So it's not the, oh, I love this kid so much.
Yeah.
It's like all of us, right?
Yeah.
Jesus, I can't believe it. Didn't take long. I didn't even, my fifth song is the one I think I'm not going to be able to explain. Let me play this song. There's this one line that it made me feel such love for my kid and
really?
My wife.
Yeah, that's awesome.
She's been waiting, longing hard to kiss your head.
I guess I should prep you. It's like almost like cowpunky kind
like
of country.
Like
it's not. It's not. It's like lovely and happy and goofy. But there's something about that line that just gets me even now.
She's been waiting, longing hard to kiss your head.
hold your hands and hold you while you fall asleep. And what if I told you I could show you something? What if I told you I could make you live? Follow my instruction, swim in the direction of my voice. Hear my voice.
It's really sweet.
I love the swim in the direction of my voice thing.
It's really like Finding Nemo. And I think of like so many moms that like, and parent and dad, so many families that try so hard to have kids and can't, and how lucky we are, you know, to like have, just to have babies, to have wanted to have them and to have them. So, and like a lot of people, all they want is to be kept up at night by a screaming kid, right? And how we might like curse that.
Well, and some people don't want that, though.
Some people don't, like, and that's totally okay.
It's probably ridiculous sounding, especially to those of you listening at 2x speed. Like, why is Mark getting emotional reading this line? And it's all about that context of those moments and the song meaning hitting me as I'm literally singing it to my, like, 8-month-old son.
Right.
Realizing what the song is about. And that's the marker. If Mark can't sing it, he's about to cry, right?
And then thinking of like the love you have for your wife and your partner, that you made this creature that's just such a gift to your family and changed your relationship in a profound way and like bonded you together in a way beyond a marriage license did, right?
Right.
And that's kind of lovely.
I need to play this when he's 16 and he does something truly horrendous. I need to just listen to that song.
Dude, I know your kid. He's never going to do something truly horrendous. He's such a good kid.
Yeah,
well, it's your daughter you have to watch out for.
Damn right. Oh, Lord. Okay, no. She's amazing, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Horrendous is all relative, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, that's just it.
Scary, maybe. Scary to me. Okay. What else do you got? Because I have one more.
I have one more, but I just thought of it. I had two more on my list, but they're like Tracy Chapman's Fast Car and Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror. But I just thought of another one that's even better. So I'm getting the title. But it's from Beck's Sea Change, which is an album I used to play for my daughter when she was in my belly. I used to put headphones on. The song is called The Golden Age. It's track one off of this album. If you can just play like the beginning of it, it's really like the first verse.
I don't think I know this album.
This album's it's Beck, my favorite Beck. Beck is also awesome, like really awesome in so many different ways and stretches across so many different genres that like it's wild how good of a musician he is. But
people are probably shocked and annoyed with me that I don't know
Beck
much
is so good. I saw him live and I was like, wow, this guy can do everything.
Yeah, well, like, he does.
Yeah, it's awesome. But The Golden Age is a great, great song.
Desert wind.
Shock. Mark should listen to more Beck.
This is a really great album. Like, you would really enjoy it because it does. I don't even think it's iconic Beck. Like, you have this image of what he is in your ear or your mind's eye in your ear, but this album, like,
more changed. Quirky than that.
Yeah. And just, this is his 8th studio album and recorded in a 2-month period. And it's just a really great atmospheric album that I think that you would really enjoy that's like unconventional for what you think of as Beck.
Well, I also feel like it's like folk rock singer song, but with like psychedelic stuff happening too.
For sure. So especially Sea Change, but all of his albums are so good.
So what's the emotionality here? Like the crying from?
I mean, I think of like when my daughter was born and like playing this for her, but that's not where it started for me. You know, this is another over disclosure, but we had a really good friend of ours that died and it was an off time event. It was in not entirely unexpected, but he was sick and he died. and it was a surprise to us. And we were like on a road trip. I think our daughter was just born. I can't remember. She might have been just born. And we were driving home and my husband got a call. Like his friend called him. And my husband's like, you know, a stoic guy, a really like dialed in guy. And he was just like, okay, on the phone. He was like, okay. And he said to his friend, okay, I love you. I'll talk to you later. And hung up the phone. And I just looked at him and I knew exactly that, like, that was the call saying that our friend had died. And it was so unexpected. I was like, it's him, right? And he's dead. And he was like, yeah. And we didn't talk the rest of the ride. And we like listened. This song like reminds me of that for a couple of reasons, because this guy was a filmmaker and the song was in a film that he made. It always reminded me of him. So I just think of that song and the whole line, like, put your hands on the wheel, like open the windows, like let the breeze take over you, like keep moving forward, is really a good reminder to like this guy's spirit and how he really did embrace every minute of life he could to an extent. And it reminds me to do that. And it's just also, it's a beautiful song. And also the lyrics are haunting and kind of moving and powerful about like passage of time and accepting your fate. And that's like, I'm noticing that that's a real trend in the songs that I've picked. It's like that sometimes life can deal you like really bad hands. And that actually makes you grow and makes you more powerful once you get over the grief portion of it. But this song like is grief to me, even though it doesn't read that way to like an average listener. So it makes me cry. Not like externally, like you cried at that song, but like inside in my soul, it makes my soul weep a little bit for my friend that should still be here by all accounts. So,
do you think your husband would also associate this song with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting when these things intersect.
Yeah. Right?
And it's not necessarily for the most obvious reasons.
Right. And like you would never know. And like, I think not only him, but like everyone in that friend group, they would hear the song and think of our friend. Think of Andy. Yeah.
That's beautiful though.
Yeah. It's really nice. Like we're connected. And after he passed, like we did feel, we're always very close with this group of friends, but now there's like, I'll go back and say like grief is awesome. Like grief connects you to other humans in a way that like words can't. Like we always, this group of friends, we always have this. We always have this like shit thing that we went through together that other people, you can explain it all day, but they don't understand unless they were like there in that time and place. And it feels really familial to like have that connection with this group of people. And like it's unbreakable, you know.
So, grief can be awesome.
Grief can be awesome.
I normally put like a goofy, funny excerpt at the beginning of the episode before we play the theme song. I wonder if this one needs to be a like, not a content warning, but like, what would you say? Like, if you want to feel, like, maybe listen to this episode. If you don't want to feel, don't listen to this episode.
I mean, this is like real talk. Like we joke around a lot and that's lovely. And I feel like this is jovial too, but for different reasons. But this is some real talk. Like you're getting a lot of personal disclosure in this sidetrack from me specifically. And you as well.
Yeah. So word of warning, listeners, you're about to hear a drum fill that's going to cue in the Nevermind the Music theme song. Okay.
Buckle up.
Oh my. All right. Thank you. I have one more.
Okay.
My category is people are terrible.
Yeah.
The world is terrible. But also the world is a beautiful place and love is real.
Okay.
Okay. So this one, I don't know how to do with a short sample, so I'm going to play a little longer than that.
Okay.
This one I first discovered when I was working for Pandora for that year.
You love that.
I mentioned there's a lot of mid-aughts music that I discovered because I was supposed to analyze it.
Is it Nickel Creek again?
It's not Nickel Creek. Okay. This is a band called Say Anything.
Okay.
Which at the time might have actually really just been a solo project of Max Bemis. And this record that came out that I had never heard of this band, they had had like a kind of like super indie album before that. And this is already indie. But this album, Is a Real Boy, was dropped in front of me and I was supposed to listen to it and convert it into data to put in the Pandora algorithm. And my mind was like blown. And I went, I got this album and listened to it a ton. And it started, it's one of those things that's kind of a concept album. It started as a rock opera, but ultimately wasn't. Like rock opera to the point that I think rock opera being like a rock story album, but maybe even was imagining it on stage, that kind of a thing.
Like the Who's Tommy.
Sure. Exactly.
The rock like opera. Tommy.
Yep.
It's the correct? Only one I can really think of.
Jesus Christ Superstar was the other really early one.
Would you say Rent is a rock opera? No.
Rent is a rock musical.
Okay.
Right? So a rock opera definitionally is supposed to just be an album. It's a type of concept album that has an actual real story.
Like Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Yes, but that's also a movie. So like when it's already like put to stage, it sort of stops being a rock opera and it's just a rock musical or a rock film.
Sure.
Right? So if we're being really strict about our definition, sure, Rent is a rock opera, but a rock opera would be maybe originally American Idiot by Green Day.
Okay.
Which, yes, they made a stage show, but that was like years later.
Okay, sure.
Same with the movie of Tommy, or same with the stage show of Jesus Christ Superstar. The fact is that was made just as an album, a rock album with a plot, right?
But I like that.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Anyways, this didn't actually get the stage.
Sure.
So I'll give a little bit of explanation and then I'll talk more about the emotional context. So this song, Max Bemis's grandparents were Holocaust survivors. And so this song is essentially a love story from a concentration camp.
Oh, God.
And I don't think this is literally biographical, but it was inspired by them. And so it's this guy's perspective of being in this concentration camp. Treblinka is the one that he cites out by name. And this song, by the way, is called Alive with the Glory of Love from 2004. But it's about finding your person.
Oh, my gosh.
Ugh. In that time. And the character dies. But, you know, it's heavy. But, oh, my God, this song. And, remember the last one was like this, like goofy. Like, this is going to be like emo-y punk rock.
Okay.
Should they catch us and dispatch us to those separate work camps? I'll dream about you. I will not doubt you with the passing of time. Oh, yeah. Should they kill me, your love will fill me as warm as the bullet.
Listeners, Mark has a literal tear streaming down his face, and I'm trying not to laugh.
Oh, so man, laugh away. No, but laugh Mark. Because it's like the idiosyncrasies of human emotion, you know? Because why me? And why me? Why is this lapsed Catholic crying about a Holocaust song?
Well, I don't know. You really respond to like this type of music as a way that like you layer emotionality onto like Sweemo and punk and ska and all this stuff. For me, the juxtaposition is so interesting between like the content and the tone of the song.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm listening for that.
Yeah.
I think I would need to listen to it like 10 more times or just read the lyrics to feel as profoundly as
that's really funny you say that because I'm not a lyric guy.
Yeah.
So what are the odds the first time I heard this that I was struck by the emotion of it? Zero. Wow. Right. It was after listening to it a bunch. And I'll tell you why, how it hit me. And this is like an actual rare crying in my life, right? So my wife's family were Holocaust survivors, right? I maybe have mentioned that to the point that we have like a nuclear extended family of one side of her family, but no extended family.
Yeah.
Because they didn't make it out of Poland, right? So that's always there. You know, it's a few generations removed, but it's there as an emotional part of now my extended family. And at the time she was my girlfriend. And we'd never really, this was an album. This is again, mid 2000s. We're still living in the San Francisco Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many times I'd heard this song, probably a half dozen or something, and never really engaged with it. Certainly not on a meaningful emotional level. And then, sorry, wife sometimes listens. She got really bad, like food poisoning or something. Like whatever it was so bad that we had to go to the hospital in the middle of the night.
Aww.
We had to drive to Oakland and go in like 2 a.m. kind of thing. And we're on our way home from, you know, 3 hours at the ER or whatever it was, or the urgent care or whatever it was, and listening to this album because it was the album on, and very, very low sleep, and heard this song. Mm-hmm. And it just made sense. Right. And we're both like driving in the middle of the night through Oakland, sobbing to this song. And ever since then, like, I can't get through it. Like, I even, you know, I had my school ensemble do it once because we did like a storytelling one. But I could get through it then because I did not sing it.
Right.
And it wasn't, it was during COVID. So it was remote anyways.
So you could but just like mute your camera.
Literally when I talk about storytelling as one of the things we do in songwriting, my songwriting class, and I will bring the song up. And I like, every time I explain what it's about, I struggle.
Because it's more, it's not so much about love in a concentration camp for you as it is about the love you have for your partner and the fact that like we're all just kind of balancing on a tip of a pin.
It's all fragile, right?
Right. It's all so, and that's.
But it's beautiful too, right?
And, well, that's just.
There's an optimism to it, even though.
Yeah, I think that's like the canes of most of these songs. It's like life is fragile and beautiful, and we're all broken, and that's lovely because it helps us be rich and dimensional as humans. It's really awesome. Music is awesome.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Oh, boy. All right. Hey, listeners. Hey, should I just make the title of the episode? Like, hey, Mark cries. Hey.
And Nicole
twice
laughs at him.
And Nicole. That's it. That's it.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Batcher and hosted and produced by Mark Poppany. You can email us at nevermusicpod@gmail.com and give us a follow on social media. Nevermind the Music is also part of the Lorehounds Network. Please join the conversation on their Discord server. Thanks for listening.